Let me see that photograph again of your brother. Just as I thought. This proves my theory. Look at your brother.
His head's gone. It's like it's been erased.
Erased from existence.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, every zero issue, I'm Siskoid.
I'm Beth.
And in this episode, we take a look at Zero Hour number 4, which is not too obviously the first. It is the first issue of Zero Hour, because it's a countdown, folks. So the prologues are more or less over, and we're heading into the crossover event for real, Bass.
Mm-hmm.
For real.
We're in it. This is the crossroads of Zero Hour roads. It's great.
Time is converging.
Yeah, something's very timey-wimey in this. I'm glad we're there. I'm glad we're there. Okay. We read a lot of stuff. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of excitement, and this is starting.
And it's a very different crossover, as we'll see, than was Invasion, the way that they've structured the books, mm-hmm. and it's going to show. And we will get a chance to talk about that. Let's look at the cover before we get into the synopsis.
Oh, yeah.
Because it uses, like, silver ink. We're in the 90s. It's gimmicks. It's like inks, special inks.
Yeah, it does a really nice effect, though. It's pleasant. But the cover...
And look how mint it is. I have not reread these books since then.
It is. This is perfect. This is not even back and board.
No.
You know, there's no back and board.
Back and board my comics.
I mean, wow, it's brilliant. But this is a very dramatic first cover. I mean, we have superheroes all around. We have multiple Hawkmen. We have the cowl of the Flash held by someone we don't know who. It's very, very dramatic. And you know what? It's only a real crisis if the Flash dies, right? So this confirms that this is a crisis.
Yeah, and it's even, that's the way they even justify it inside the comic itself.
Yeah.
As we'll see. So yeah, it's a strike. I like the cover because it does have like that Flash, that big Flash element. At the front, it's not just a collection of heroes flying around, which I think some of these covers can be and are.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're pinups most of the time.
Yeah. But this one has a pinup quality because you've got heroes coming on either side and just the faces of all the Hawks. But that central element is percussive. It's boom.
Oh, yeah. And there's something in the background. We can't see it, but it's some kind of bald energy with lightning, green lightning coming out of it.
Oh, yeah. Green lightning.
So something.
Clues.
Something's going on. Oh, it's very nice. It's very nice. I enjoy it.
All right. Well, let's look at it. 0 Hour number 4 by Dan Jurgens and Jerry Ordway. So it's a good art team, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dan Jurgens both writing and penciling. It's gonna go all over the place. So
yeah, brace yourselves.
Brace yourselves.
This is not linear.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of captions. So the end of time, 32 hours ago. how do you calculate time? Anyway, the end of time, 32 hours ago. The time trapper is ripped to shreds by a multicolored beam of energy. The mystery villain gloats that from this vantage point he can look back and change everything preceding it. The countdown to 0 Hour has begun. Apocalypse, 30 hours ago. Metron warns Darkseid of the impending danger to the universe, but the arrogant tyrant doesn't believe him, so Metron must find other allies. Gotham City, 29 hours ago. Batman and Robin meet an impossible Batgirl as an impossible Dick Grayson Robin watches. We've seen this. The Vanishing Point, 28 hours and 42 minutes ago. The Linear Men discover nothing exists from the 71st century on except a troubling whiteness. It's like modern day. And the phenomenon is moving back to the beginning of time. Wave Rider is sent on a mission to investigate. The 64th century, 28 hours, 42 minutes ago. The Flash's fight with Abracadabra is interrupted by Wave Rider and the Linear Man, arriving in time to warn of the destructive front coming. Wave Rider is unable to close the rift that's forming, so Kadabra suggests the Flash run away from it, creating a vortex behind him, and at ultimate speed, which Wally West has never dared go, race back into it, creating a shockwave that should close it. Whether he's wrong or is just trying to kill the Flash, it doesn't work, and Wally melts into the time stream, leaving only an empty costume behind. 64th century Earth is wiped from existence. Metropolis, 24 hours and 42 minutes ago. Batman and Superman are recruited by Metron. It's another piece we've seen.
We've seen this.
Star City, 5700 AD, 24 hours and 40 minutes ago. Wave Rider and the Linear Man catch up to the anomaly and have another chance to stop it. A young Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, is already there fighting to stop it, having been plucked from history by the people of this time. The ring energy fired into the rift only makes it stronger. Clues. The Linear Man figures something out, but he and Green Lantern are erased before he can tell Wave Rider what it is, except the word crisis. The Golden Hero slips back into the time stream just in time to escape the wave, where he detects an anomaly riding the currents. Earth, 21 hours and 38 minutes ago, the JSA's Hawkman is fighting Vandal Savage in a back alley when he is split into a half a dozen different Hawkmen from past and possibly future continuity. At the same moment, the Global Guardian, called Dr. Mist, feels reality unraveling and sees other Dr. Mists as fleeting images. And in Los Angeles, Metron and Superman recruit Green Lantern Kyle Rayner. It's with the power of his ring that they manage to project their image to all of Earth's heroes to put the rallying call out. It is received by the likes of Donna Troy's Darkstar, Aquaman, the Titans, Superboy, the Atom, the Ray, Dr. Fate, the Outsiders, Green Arrow, and Anima. Really, they called Anima. Metron next contacts the Spectre directly, but he refuses to help. Natural disasters have nothing to do with punishing evil. Vanishing Point, 18 hours and 35 minutes ago, Wave Rider consults the computer banks and learns about the crisis on Infinite Earths, which only the Linear Men know about, remember. Earth, 18 hours, 25 minutes ago, the rest of the Justice Society heeds Hawkman's call, but the other Hawkman had disappeared by then. Green Lantern Alan Scott also shows up asking if they got the call from Superman. And just then, Vandal Savage disappears in a painful flash of white energy, erased. Wave Rider appears to them, claiming that time is actually being eaten at both ends, and that Vandal Savage was destroyed when his birth was erased. Flash Jagerek is distraught to learn of Wally's death in the far future. 18 hours, 19 minutes ago, Extant has defeated the Linear Men and taken possession of Vanishing Point.
Dum, dum, dum.
Okay, so...
there's a lot of stuff, and there's a lot to unravel in here. Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff is like... with stuff we've seen,
yeah,
just like recapped a little bit or given an extension.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the stuff here that seems new we'll see again in books that are to come, because like the Zero Hour is sort of astride the books that have come before and the books that are coming out that week.
So we're going to see all of, or most of this again.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Some of it.
And they're really hinting stuff at this point. There's a lot of hints. I don't know what's going on. I can't.
Maybe we're not supposed to know. I mean, yeah.
I'm waiting to discover.
If we talk about how this differs from Invasion. So Invasion was like a monthly book, you know, across 3 months. Each issue is like a tentpole event.
Yeah.
This happens. Then we've got books, all the tie-ins reacted to it. Then this happens. And then all the books reacted to that.
Yeah.
So you had like a big complete story in the Invasion. This is a weekly. And so it's coming out, it's like, this is happening, and then whatever books you get, it's also simultaneously happening in those books.
Okay.
And I think it's like, a lot, Millennium did this. Millennium was a weekly for 2 months, like 8 issues. This is going to be 5. There was a lot of recapping. It was telling its own story, which was terrible, but it was telling its own story, but then recapped a lot of what was happening simultaneously.
Okay.
And I think this is doing this that same thing.
Yeah, trying to cover bases, I guess.
If you're not reading everything.
Exactly. If you're not reading everything, you need to know some stuff. So I guess that we're recapping in all the books the essentials.
Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily spoiling anything, because it's like, okay, Batman encounters Bad Girl, but that whole story is in the Batman issue. We only see like the first couple pages.
Yeah.
So we're not being sold. You know, it's like, oh, Batman meets Superman. Yeah, that happens in the comics, but we don't get the whole thing with the alternate Batman.
Exactly.
It doesn't replace the actual issues.
We get the cliff note.
It's worse sin is maybe being padding. A lot of these pages are just stuff we've seen before. Yeah. So really, how much Zero Hour is there in the comic?
Well, that's true.
It's like there are fewer pages than it seems.
It's like a third or half of it.
Oh, no, maybe. I don't think half. I mean, all the stuff with Wave Rider, that's going to be like original material. I think the JSA doesn't have a book. So the JSA stuff...
it's original stuff.
Except maybe the Hawkman stuff's going to dovetail into the Hawkman book.
Okay.
So we're going to get some of that there. And maybe things that... it's that kind of crossover.
Yeah.
Where the event is so simultaneous with the books, you have no choice but to buy the event itself. Because it's going to have all the big moments. But at the same time... you could probably divine what's happening just from reading the tie-ins.
This type of crossover. Because, I mean, if you're chucking out 10 books a week, I don't know how many books they're throwing out.
It's more than that, yeah.
Yeah. They have a lot of books coming out every week. They want to make sure everybody's in on the 0 hour thing. It feels like they're using a shotgun method. It spreads a lot of, and you might cover a lot of bases, but it's not going to be as precise or as... I'm just trying to figure out why they use this method for this story.
I think the method is predicated on how often the book has to come out. If they decided to do it weekly, and the reason they're doing it weekly is that it's going to reset their universe. They want to reset now. Quick. They don't want, you know, they've planned a 0 month where they're going to reintroduce everyone. So you don't want your heroes trapped in a crisis for a year, which is what they did with the Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Yeah.
Where you kept moving in and out of that story and red skies and lightning and all of that stuff, you know, just colors of the Flash. but it took a year.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd be, like a certain book would be stuck in crisis mode for 3-4 months. That's a major part of your storytelling for that year. So the weekly is to do it like in 1 month. In 1 month, we're going to do all these anomalies. And then the next month, 0 issues. And we've rebooted, soft reboot the universe. You want to do it quick. So once you've decided it's a weekly, then how does that work? To me, it could have told just its own story. Just a Wave Rider, Linear Men, JSA maybe, the villain. And you could have done a page to see what else is happening. But at the same time, it's maybe cross-promotional. They want you to go, Batgirl, I'm going to get that Batman issue. Oh, Anima's in this. I'm going to go get Anima for the first time in my life.
What we need right now is an Anima.
Is an Anima.
It's a lot funnier when you're French and you can't make the difference between enema and anima. But, you know, you get it. I just explained it, so this is not funny anymore.
You didn't need to explain it to me. Yeah. I mean,
but
you don't know how many times I've seen the Batman movie.
This
or listen to the Prince tape, which is it's a sample on there.
what I'm trying to figure out is, all right, DC Comics wants to reboot its entire universe, have a soft reboot because
the problems that have cropped up since Crisis.
We want to keep everything within a continuity, and this is what we want to do. This is the road we have chosen. Everything will be in continuity. But continuity is, you know, you can't always mess with it because, you know, so how do you soft reboot a continuity where you want to, you know, end some stuff and keep some stuff? I mean, nobody's rebooting Batman. Well, he just got rebooted. This is after Nightfall, right?
So in a way, yeah. And also we've talked about how he no longer knows it's Joe Chill by the end of this or something.
Yeah. So how do you do that without messing up everything?
But the fact that they acknowledge in this that the crisis happened.
Well, that's just
that if you are outside time, which the Vanishing Point is, so the Linear Men are outside time, outside the multiverse or single universe at this point, they have a history of what happened before. They are aware of Hopper Time. So it's a way to say it did happen. It was all reset, but the reset is part of the story.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, there have been discrepancies or there are problems, and then there's going to be, or somebody is inspired by the crisis to enact a new crisis, or these things are just on a cycle, which they appear to be. But, you know, it's just these things happen and they keep happening. It's part of the cycle of the superhero universe, and that's part of the story. So the reboot does not destroy what happened before.
No.
In the continuity we're watching, yes, history has changed, but that past history, that former history still exists because it used to be the history. So if you're looking at the history of histories, does it make sense? You know, if you're looking at...
It's very timey-wimey.
Well, I mean, it's the same as saying the history of comics. Yeah. In the history of comics, there's a pre-crisis template or universe. And then after Crisis, this is the histories that have changed.
Yeah.
But we as readers remember the previous history because we're outside time.
Yes. We are the Linear Men.
We are the Linear Men. And we are living linearly.
Yeah.
And they're being rebooted and shunted back and forth.
Yeah.
But we remember.
Actually, we're going to be smarter than that. We're going to be linear persons.
What do you think of this conceit? The sort of local time conceit, you know, the end of time, 36 hours ago.
And we're doing the 24 type thing, you know, the 24, the show.
I mean, they're doing, it's really a countdown, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a countdown. So that's how I read it. It's like, all right, we're doing the countdown. This is the first, well, number four, but the number four is the first of this bigger countdown. So I thought it was nice. I can read something going backward. It's totally absurd, but I was fine with that. There's a sense of urgency.
Maybe there's also a, you know, maybe there is a, like an absolute time. Maybe it's linear man time. It's vanishing point time. I mean, if you're living in the vanishing point, every time you return, you're not meeting your younger selves. Crap, we're out of sequence.
You're in.
There's just like an absolute time there.
Yeah.
So to them, the crisis happens and they're going like 36 hours ago from 0 hour. They're going, crap, time is started being eaten.
Yeah.
From our outside the universe perspective. 12 hours later.
So wait a minute.
Our perspective.
Are you telling me that they're keeping time in a place where there is no time?
I mean, there's got to be a local time.
There has to be,
because they're flowing. You know, it's not the wormhole in DS9. It's like they're looking at windows of things.
Yeah,
but I think it's the absolute time of the wave that's eating time.
Yes,
it sparks off 36 hours from the moment where it hits the middle.
Yeah, so we have 36 hours to fix this thing.
Right, wherever we are,
Wherever we are in time. So, and I guess that's vanishing point time or no time.
Outside the universe time.
Yeah. Outside time.
Outside time.
Is right. Recording time.
The way the linear men perceive time.
Yeah.
We have 36 hours from the time that the time trapper gets shot
to point zero. Yeah.
Point zero, when the two ends of the universe, the Big Bang and the Big Crunch.
Just
collide. I don't think it's a crunch. They use like entropy, heat death. Boom. Yeah. When that wave hits. So essentially, you could cross, if you were that wave, you could cross the entire universe in 72 hours, going from one end to the other.
There we go.
Like if you're in a time machine, maybe there's like, it takes time for the TARDIS to cross. It's like 72 hours.
There's time.
From one end to the other.
There's time inside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So.
And sometimes it takes a while to get to the places, right? On the show. So.
It takes time.
What is that time? What is that vortex traveling time? Traveling in the vortex, 72 hours from the Big Bang to final entropy. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
All right.
We understand each other. It only took us like 20 minutes.
But at least
we understand time.
We're on the same page how we're going to look at it.
Take Einstein or
I know.
Or Hawking, you know, it's like it took us 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go through the comic in order of its events and if we have any comments about that. The first thing is the time trapper getting killed. So he's a sort of representation of continuity, I've always felt, because as far as the Legion goes, whenever the Legion is rebooted, and it's going to happen a few times, and maybe this is like, it's not even the first time that this is going to happen, right?
Okay.
They always have like a different identity for the time trapper sort of thing. So the time trapper sort of there's always going to be a time trapper, but depending on the continuity, it's not necessarily the same person, the way they've played it. And if continuity changes, sort of the time trapper's agenda might change.
Okay.
So, and he's at the very end of the universe. He's at the end of time. Getting him killed is like killing the guardian of time or guardian of that continuity and saying this continuity is going. And it also shows a lot more flesh than Time Trapper usually doesn't even have a face.
Well, he's
like darkness in this you see.
Well, he has a form. Well, he has a face, actually.
Yeah, he has a face. So.
Kind of looks like, a weird version of, the Spectre.
We'll see also how this works with the Legion issues, because Time Trapper has to show up in those during the 0 hour, and we'll have like a whole show devoted to the Legion stuff, to end of an era, and we'll see how it connects to this. Next was Darkseid and Metron asking Darkseid for help. Why is this here? And my thought here was that anti-life equation, but shouldn't he be, because he doesn't say anything about it, shouldn't he be happy that the universe is ending? But he doesn't even believe it. This is just like a mirror of what happened in Crisis, where he just took Apocalypse off the board. When Crisis hits, and there's a scene where Darkseid says, well, the new gods are not, screw this, we're not part of this event. And he pulls himself out.
Yeah.
So it feels like that moment.
It really does. It feels like he's saying to Metron, "Oh, you wanna do this? Well, do it. We're not doing anything.
We're the gods of this reality, but we're not actual gods.
We're not.
So we're not actual gods. We're not going to do anything." So Metron being neutral and about balance.
Yeah, and I had this questioning. Darkseid says, "I didn't feel anything. I don't think this is happening."
Yeah, like he's connected to the cosmic. He's like, he's got a cosmic awareness.
He should be sensing this, and he's not sensing anything. And Metron just, He just bails. I'm like, well, yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. Well, I don't feel anything. Metron does. And this is a weird thing. Is it because of the Mobius chair?
Darkseid's a classic tyrant. He doesn't listen to anyone. This is the thing. So you've got your experts. And I know Metron is not necessarily on his side. He's not one of the...
Kind
of
neutral.
Yeah. But he's more goody than the baddie.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you got your expert here. The cosmic awareness dude.
Yeah.
And you're not going to listen to his expertise. I didn't feel anything. No, that's not your job to feel things. It's like...
You might very well be onto something.
You know? You don't argue with Granny Goodness about education. They've all got their... If they're gods, they're gods of a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Metron is like the god of knowledge. Why would you argue with knowledge?
Because you're a tyrant.
That's...
And well, that might be just it. Maybe in what time was this? 94? Maybe in 94, there was something out there saying, you know, tyrants are a bit stupid.
Only in 1994. If only we'd listened.
If only.
Then there's a Batman bit, which we covered on the previous show.
Where and it's fun. It was short and sweet, and just a recap of what we saw.
And then the Vanishing Point thing takes us to the Flash thing. And
this is where we get a little bit more.
Yeah. So Flash is dead. Yeah. I mean, appears to die.
Well, right? He's not there anymore. I don't think the plan was so stupid. I think Kadabra was trying to save himself.
Okay.
Flash, you know, super fast, and then coming back, creating this whipping action, like a time punch, that creates this weird ripple effect.
Right. Should it have sent the wave?
Exactly. Backward. We're using speed and distance to affect time, which is three parts of that equation, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't stupid. It wasn't stupid at all.
I mean, Kadabra comes from a society that their science is so advanced.
It looks like magic.
It looks like magic.
So if you're going from one point to another and so fast that you're back at the single, at the beginning, you're basically tricking time.
But it didn't work.
It didn't work.
It did not punch time. He pierced it.
Yeah.
He went into the wave.
Exactly.
And then his costume survived, but he didn't.
Well, that costume is... It's one hell of a costume.
But also, I mean, this is sort of hinting already at what will be like Speed Force tricks.
Yeah.
That you can disappear into the Speed Force. The danger of going too fast, which is still part of the Flash book today, right?
The whole science of the Flash became the whole magic of the Flash. With the Speed Force.
Yeah. We'll talk about that during the Letters Lost in Time, because I think our friend Diablo Frank makes a point about this, which is interesting. Okay, he didn't do it on purpose. It still fails.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? I mean, I think this is like really the first Kerpow moment of the miniseries.
Well, yeah, you take out one of the most powerful superheroes.
And they do it like with a big splash page.
Yeah.
The Linear Men, Wave Rider is like, there's a sadness. They can't believe they lost this powerful hero.
Well, I mean, he fixed everything last time.
Or one of them did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also at the cost of his life. So this here is a mirror of what happened to Barry Allen.
Yeah.
But without the result.
Exactly.
As far as we know.
Because
we know Wally West didn't die here.
We know.
But they're going to let us believe this for a week.
Yeah.
At least.
And it's fine. That's fine. We've seen worse.
Yeah. No, I mean, we need stakes.
Yeah, exactly.
And putting a flash on the... It's supposed to shock us. Obviously, then there's the bit with Batman and Superman meeting and Metron showing up. We've seen all of this before. The bit with Green Lantern.
Yeah.
So I did a little research on this one because
this kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it does. Well, not out of nowhere. It comes out of Green Lantern number 8, 1961.
Really?
Yes. There is a connection between Hal Jordan and the 58th century.
Well, now.
The reference to Paul Manning, they say, oh, Paul Manning, their champion, their great champion, is from that story. It's basically Paul Manning is a made up identity that they foisted on Hal Jordan. So he would act as their solar director, I guess champion, once their brand of time travel wiped his memory. So they took Hal Jordan, it's a Silver Age. So they took Silver Age, Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, to the 58th century, but that wiped his mind. And they implanted a fake bunch of memories, a fake identity of Paul Manning, a heroic type, so that he could solve their problems. Okay?
So this is Total Recall.
Yes. Yes. Hal figured it out. And I asked Paul Manning, and the identity was then copied into a clone body so Paul Manning would live on and play that role in that the society apparently badly needed.
Okay.
So there's a Paul Manning clone body. I don't know if he's a clone of Hal Jordan or just a clone, but that's how they resolved the situation Silver Age style.
Okay.
This is a second time travel story where they saw that wave coming and they called Hal Jordan again.
Okay.
But this time his mind's not wiped, I don't think. But it's a way to introduce Hal Jordan in this pre-parallax. So, clues.
Yeah,
it's clues. Clues. Because he shoots the green energy into the wavefront.
Yeah.
And it makes it stronger. Clues.
Clues.
Clues. So we're not saying anything about this, but I mean, it is a more than 15-year-old story. 25-year-old story.
So spoilers.
but he gets wiped out. This is going to be, say, parallax, but it's a bit paradox as well. Because here, the Linear Man and young Hal Jordan buy it. They are wiped from existence.
Yeah.
And only, again, Flash's costume survived.
That costume, man. We should make everything out of that costume.
Yeah, why isn't everything made out of Flash costume? Then we could survive the apocalypse.
We could survive anything.
So that's the bit with Green Lantern.
That's kind of refreshing to have an old Silver Age thing brought back to, you know, for a crisis in time. I mean, it's only fitting.
And this is a bit how the tie-ins work with people in and out of past periods.
Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of appearing out of past periods, the next bit is the JSA.
Yeah.
Or actually Hawkman. But it's the Hawkman of the JSA. It's not the current day Carter Hall, not Qatar Hall. And then he's fighting Vandal Savage.
In an alleyway. That's where you want to fight one of the most powerful people ever.
I don't even know which city they're in.
You know, punching him into garbage cans.
And then he splits into many, many Hawkmen, which is, I believe, one of your nightmares.
I do believe it's one of my nightmares. Although, I was looking at the costumes and I'm like, ooh, I kind of like this red Hawkman with the, you know, but I've never seen him.
I think the modern day, or that current day Hawkman from Hawkworld, the Hawkworld Hawkman, they had like this costume, red and gold kind of.
That's my favorite costume of all time.
So what do you think of the
cyborg?
There's a weird cyborg one. I don't know what the tubing is coming out of there. There's one we can't really see that's like metallic.
Yeah.
And then there's really the ones we recognize most is the Carter Hall in the middle.
Yeah.
With the red circle as a very simplified costume.
Yeah.
That he used in the latest JSA series. And then there's like the hairy one.
Yeah.
That's the Qatar Hall we sort of know, the Silver Age one more or less. That one with the red, the sort of bluish with the red center.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the first appearance of that costume. I don't think that appears until Hawkman number 0.
Really?
I don't think so.
Because this is like the military style Hawkman, right? This is
But yes, but
the Hawkworld Hawkman?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, the wings are metallic rather than feathered. We're going to have to check on that. We're gonna do a whole show on Hawkman.
And
we're not just going to be like the one issue. We're going to lead up to that. I want to torture Bass as much as possible.
I might get a taste for Hawk.
Yeah, for Thanagarian.
Maybe.
We'll see. I'm not sure I have anything to say about the Dr. Mist bit. I don't know why they keep bringing Dr. Mist into things. Like he's some sort of I guess he's the Sorcerer Supreme, but he's not in any way a main character. I'd rather have Dr. Fate in these positions.
Yeah. That's the doctor we do like in these positions.
But he's there.
I don't know. Maybe he was a flavor of the month type thing. Maybe they're trying to...
You know what? Doesn't Primal Force feature him and also start with 0 month? That may be it. Maybe they're setting us up for one of the new titles.
Okay.
That makes sense. And then we've got, the Call to Arms.
Yeah.
As per the Green Lantern issue. As per Green Lantern 55. But we're seeing the different people that he calls. You know, all the big guns.
All the big guns.
And Enema.
And you know what? This is one of those places where I'm like, ugh. You know, the Green Lantern, Kyle Reiner, I guess he's just starting out in this. This is like his introduction to the DC universe. But, you know, that little tiny unsatisfactory camera for shooting Superman's image to everybody.
Oh, you don't think that's cool enough for him?
No, really not. I would have loved... Kyle is known for his elaborate love of manga, you know, this over-rendered creations with the ring. And this is very underwhelming.
I don't think... Maybe Dan Jurgens doesn't quite get it.
Or maybe...
You know, it's too new.
Maybe that thing isn't a thing yet. You know, maybe he's just Green Lantern. Giving him, you know, these different personalities with different types of constructs, or how they would do their own constructs. Maybe that's not a something that they had in mind there.
Yeah. Well, maybe I think maybe the creative team, the Green Lantern creative team, had that in mind. Dan Jurgens here.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, he's got to cover all these heroes. They're not all people he knows necessarily very well. And most of them just get like the one line. I mean, the Green Lantern bit, he just has to add like that one panel.
Yeah.
And the rest of the story we knew. So,
it's just that moment where I went, ah, that was just, it's a nice little place where you could have, you know, pumped up a bit of Kyle Reiner there.
What do you think of the Spectre once again refusing to take part in a crossover event?
Oh, he's such a jerk.
Are people, do they think readers, every time this happens, do they think readers are going, where's the Spectre in all this? No, but there's always going to be like these super powerful, not just the Spectre. There are plenty of godlike beings in the superhero universe. They're not going to show up to do these things.
No.
They always like, it's like they've always got something else to do, or, well, let's just ignore that they exist because they would break the story.
Yeah.
Unless it's a setup to him eventually doing something.
Yeah. That's why you would put him in that story.
Yeah, because he was in Crisis on Infinite Earths. You know, he gets that big cover where he's, you know, he's fighting.
Yeah, and he's giant Spectre fighting the Anti-Monitor. Yeah. We love
that. So sometimes I think, well, I'll use, it's a pun, but the Spectre of the original Crisis sort of looms over this.
Yes.
Where we're making callbacks about, you know, from the Crisis before. And the Spectre was in that, let's show the Spectre. You know, the Flash was important to that. Let's do something with the Flash. And then that sort of idea.
We're cementing the idea of a real crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically
just what we're doing. You know, Wave Rider is going to realize that the crisis existed, happened.
Yeah.
Even though he was not aware of it until he looked at the databanks.
But especially in how the Spectre deals with Metron right now. I mean, he says, natural disasters do not concern me. I'm only against evil. My mission is only directed against evil.
Well, I mean, who's the guy breaking the time thing?
It's not a natural
disaster. It's an unnatural disaster.
It's man-made by this evil person, right. And you're not doing your job, Spectre.
It's, you know, cosmic level terrorism.
Exactly.
Is what's happening. So the Spectre should be, you know, you should be getting a call from God.
I think
anytime now.
Spectre.
I'm sorry, the voice.
The Spectre in this is doing a dark side. He's like, you know, Metron's coming over and saying, hey, you're this very powerful being that should be dealing with this stuff. Why aren't you? And he's like, don't tell me how to do my job. And that's basically
what I just lost my title. I don't know when the Spectre ended, but he does have a book at this point, I don't think.
He looks like somebody who's just saying, you're not going to tell me how to do my things. And does nothing because he's insulted that some Metron guy with a chair comes over and tells him what to do. Yeah. So
a so-called new god.
Yeah.
When he answers.
Yeah,
he
to answers the old to voice. The, you know?
The voice, yeah.
You know, so,
the god above all gods, yeah.
So we're giving these people intentions that maybe are not there.
Well, but, you know, we may not remember. It's going to take us so long to get to 0 hour number zero as the podcast flies. That we're not necessarily going to remember like this moment, but like present day Siskoid is kind of calling out future Siskoid to be disappointed if neither the Spectre nor Darkseid features at all again.
Yeah.
Because then we're just like, these are wasted pages. These are pages telling us that nothing happens here. Nothing happens there. We don't care where nothing happens. Yeah. We want to know where things happen. So
exactly.
So this stuff is like, it's like pages for nerds who are asked, what about the new gods? That's me doing Rob's impression of the comic book guy.
Well, what about
Darkseid?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't care for these kinds of things. And we saw it in eventually, like the Magic Heroes did a thing.
Yeah, they try
In Invasion. Still, where are all these pages with the Spectre going, I don't want to, the Magic Heroes being told, don't intervene. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we'll let ourselves be destroyed.
Yeah, that's it.
How about we do that?
Yeah, this is off our scale. This isn't, let's let the chips fall where they may. Yeah, okay. But I don't need to see that. No. I need to see the heroes that are involved, not the heroes that are not involved. And then when people say, what about the Spectre? It's like, he's not in the story. I'm guessing he's in another dimension fighting like these demons or something. It doesn't matter to me.
So this is basically pre-fan service. Is anybody going to ask about the Spectre? Well, they might.
Yeah.
Should we put him in there?
This is pre-Twitter. Who are you afraid of?
Who are you afraid of? You're afraid somebody's going to write a nicely put out letter?
That you're going to have to print?
That you're going to have to read?
Where the editor is going to say at the end, yeah, the Spectre was probably in another dimension fighting demons. See how easy it is? It's so easy. I don't need a page for it or two or... So, unless he returns. Unless he's wrong about the whole evil thing. And we know that the Spectre is in the... You know, the Spectre does have a shared fate with a certain character that I keep referring to as Clues. But I don't think this is... I don't think this is here. This doesn't happen here. It happens much later. No. It
happens much later.
Much later. So,
Unless it was planned out in 94.
Nah, no way. No, because it seems unplanned. It seems so improvised across the board. The next bit is Vandal Savage getting his origin story eaten.
I hope not. He's one of my favorites.
Well, look, he disappears.
Yeah, he does disappear. And in a nice white... We like these white things, especially for comics.
Yeah.
That's how you make comics disappear, with an eraser.
The white page.
White page. Yeah. And the Kirby Crackle.
Cut out. Yeah, that's a good point.
Kirby Crackle all over. Mm. It's wonderful.
This is one of these absurd Doctor Who timey-wimey kind of things where... Or Back to the Future, soft physics, where this guy gets destroyed in the past, but, the human race hasn't been destroyed. I mean, if Earth is destroyed, if the Big Bang never happens, because that's the first thing that gets eaten up on that end, then nothing else happens.
Nothing else happens. Actually, matter doesn't happen.
Nothing happens. Even happening doesn't happen. There's no time or matter. I mean, so you only need to erase the Big Bang.
Yeah.
That's it.
That big moment, that little singularity
thing. Yeah, where the hand in the... God's hand.
That makes it explode.
No. So, this is the absurdity of this thing, but it's eating whatever is being erased. We're okay, just like in Back to the Future. We're okay so long as we're not totally erased yet. Then things are being erased.
Yeah. But they do, in these couple panels, they do address certain things.
Okay.
Like, Alan Scott comes over.
We just saw him in the Green Lantern issue.
I mean, they're fighting Vandal Savage, and first thing that comes to mind is, ooh, that costume's different. And, oh boy, Alan, you look young. You know, this is part of the dialogue.
Yeah, they haven't seen him. They haven't seen him since his change.
Vandal Savage disappears in a blast of darkness and white and color, and first thing the Atom says is, hey, Alan, how'd you get so young all of a sudden? I mean, this is...
His jealousy is overwhelming.
Well, it's also very JSA. I mean, it's very...
We've seen all this before. How come you're so young, Adam?
Yeah, because he's getting old.
It's the 90s, and you're still a fit fighting... I know it looks like a buff 50s in the JSA series. But buff 50s is not the age you're supposed to have.
No.
When you were a fighting hero in your 20s, exactly. In the 40s.
Above 50s, get a mountain bike and go mountain biking. Or, start some soft sport. I don't know. But, fighting crime.
And then, I guess the button on this is just Extant finally showing up. I guess where we're supposed to think Extant is the guy that shot the Time Trapper, even though they never wanted to show us.
Yeah, we didn't see that.
But, you've got your... basically, the last page has Jay Garrick with the Flash costume in his arms. No! And then we're told very briefly that you see the Linear Men sort of knocked out on the floor.
Yeah.
Or the ones that were still at the base, which is like Rip Hunter and Lorelei. And he's taken over the base. The base. That's outside time.
He's in Vanishing Point. This is where he is. And this is the first time we see Extant in the comic, for reals.
Then Zero Hour does give us a little back page, which just tells us go read this comic, go read this comic, go read this comic. I mean, it's the promotional bit, but there's also a little text. And I just want to note that in those notes, in addition to directing you to all those tie-ins, they tell us that the Zero Hour logo was designed by Tim Zack and that the DC timeline fold-out that we'll see in issue zero, so reserve your copy now, was designed by Brian Pierce, so I can get some credits for that work. And they do thank the creative teams of not just Crisis on Infinite Earths, but the original JLA-JSA crossover crises that inspired it. So we're being told, you know, it's all part of the same continuum. Crisis wasn't the first crisis either, you know, the JLA-JSA stories were the first crises that inspired Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is inspiring Crisis in Time, which will inspire Infinite Crisis, which will inspire...
The New 52.
Flashpoint.
Flashpoint.
You know, it's nice here that they give...
Yeah.
You hardly ever see this. Well, let's give credit to the logo maker, to the... You know, so that's cool.
Well, maybe we didn't have... maybe they did, but it kind of feels like they don't have a sense of fixing stuff.
Mm.
Or that's not how it's presented.
Well, you know? Crisis on Infinite Earths definitely was a fixer.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, right.
But the original ones, no.
Yeah, had 50 years of, you know, all types of stuff that's all in continuity. Mm. I mean, all the robot Supermen, really?
Yeah.
That's in continuity. Everything's in...
I guess the original Crises was just a way to build up the multiverse, which then blows up in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
And we no longer have that to play with. Any last thoughts on Zero Hour number 4?
It's a beautiful book. It's you should really put this in a bag and board it because it's very, very
nice. It's in a bag with all the other ones.
Because it's very nice. Colorful and it's well drawn and it's the start to a, I hope, very cool story.
I mean, Jerry Ordway is one of the best artists, and him lending his inks to Dan Jurgens here does give it a crisis-like feel because he did work on Crisis on Infinite Earths with George Perez.
Nice.
So you get a continuity there art-wise, even though maybe the panels are a bit bigger
Jurgens. We talked a lot about Crisis on Infinite Earths and all of that, but there is the Crisis on Infinite Earth going on in the CW also.
Mm-hmm. Right
and,
now, yeah.
Do you think that maybe in the future, because they do
We had Invasion on the CW, if that's what you're asking. Well, will there be a Zero
Hour? Do you think? Because they have Vanishing Point. They've been there. Legends of Tomorrow basically act like the Linear Men or almost. So do you think they're going to maybe tackle Zero Hour?
They could do it. I don't think you'd do it right away because they use like the Elseworlds stuff and the Earth-X stuff to build up the multiverse more than it already had been.
Yeah.
And then so Crisis, which had been, you know, basically they'd be doing Crisis ever since the Flash pilot. Going forward, if this keeps up, I mean, you wouldn't do like a Crisis in Time right away.
No.
Depending on how the crisis ends.
I think they do enjoy their, you know, multi...
Yeah, I think you kind of need like the multiverse. But even within let's say the multiverse survives, even within that, you could still do Time Under Threat, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But since you do have a time travel show with Legends, I don't know how... Maybe they're the fulcrum. They're the ones that notice the waves coming in. But you kind of need your extant... Gonna need your Monarch / Extant / Clues about the you know, you kind of need your Time Trapper, you kind of need your, you know, so you need to build up that part of it through Legends, probably, because Legends can do it.
Well, I think it would be Legends centric,
but I don't know, I'd love them to tackle like Armageddon 2001.
Ooh.
So then, I mean, obviously Wave Rider is like the ship, you know, they've already used that IP, but even so, maybe you could still have like a real Wave Rider.
Anything can happen. Yeah. I mean, you can take the Wave Rider's essence or, you know, and put it in a guy.
Because it could be interesting to see like somebody come in and say, we got to stop this alternate future. And then either you do the Monarch thing or anyway, you build up a villain that eventually wants to erase history. I think it's a lot about IPs, recognizable names.
Yeah.
Zero Hour just got a big omnibus. You know, people are looking at all these crossovers. Oh, what's going to CW going to do next? Zero Hour has a nice ring to it.
It's got
a nice sound. So you could do Zero Hour and, you know, change it a whole lot. Invasion wasn't like Invasion.
Absolutely
and Crisis
not.
Isn't going to be like Crisis.
No.
So you could do it.
It's its own thing. And
I think it's got a name that you could put on your shows.
And the whole countdown thing would be... some that we do like in television form.
Yeah, that's right. As long as they don't try to do countdown.
No.
That was not a good event. But yeah, I think Zero Hour could have that ring to it. It's a lot easier to sell than something like 52. So yeah, okay. That's my answer.
Okay. Yeah. I was basically there also. I was like, yeah, they could do it, but they do need...
They need to set it up.
They need more. To set it up for like a year or 2 years.
Well, I feel like the last 3 years, including this, inclusively, have been about building up to crisis.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you need, like, 0 hour is like, okay, you need to build up to that. They have to keep upping the stakes. So this is a big stake story.
Because this crisis on Infinite Earths really tied in everything.
Mm-hmm. The movies and the old shows.
It's... For continuity freaks, we didn't see cartoon people in this, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'm not even there yet. I'm like 3 years. I am 3 years out of date with all these shows. Yeah. But eventually. So I've been trying not to look at spoilers.
Don't worry about that.
Even though I realize.
So yeah, it's impossible.
No. We'll take a short break. When we return, your feedback on our previous episode.
Ooh.
Water Podcast Network is a collection of super friends plus Shag. So what could be more appropriate than a podcast about the super friends? It's For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast, a read-through show about the classic DC comic book series covering all 47 issues of the original run plus a few surprises. Hosted by me, Rob Kelly, and a rotating group of my super friends. Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
It all looks good to me.
Letters lost in time!
Letters lost in time!
And these are your letters, your comments on our coverage of The Flash and Green Lantern tie-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first things first, Bess, I want to apologize.
Really? What?
To the listenership for a typo that went on air basically every time I had to mention what Green Lantern issue we were covering. Clearly, it was GL number 55, not number 54, which I kept saying, because it was written 54 on my sheet. So I kept saying 54, but it's 55. That's the one with the 0 hour banner. Though ironically, there was 0 hour material in number 54, which we didn't cover, just like we didn't cover temporal anomalies in Flash leading up to the tie-in.
Yeah.
We've got to make some choices here. But in GL54, there's a future Los Angeles that blinks into existence, and Kal Rayner must rescue its inhabitants from a major earthquake, and then it blinks out again.
Hmm.
So there was more time travel anomaly type stuff. Just before the events, before the fight with
Major Force.
Clearly, this is because time is out of whack leading up to 0 hour, and we should have mentioned it. The numbering snafu is at the root of all these problems, because I wrote 54, then didn't pull out 54, pulled out 55, because it had the banner, and we kept talking about 55 instead of 54. Well, we never talked about 54. Thanks to Mark Baker Wright for bringing this to my attention, because he's pretty bummed to have read number 54 in preparation. Because I guess we dodged a bullet. That's what he's saying. But he didn't. So sorry.
On behalf of everybody. Apology accepted.
Thank you. So let's look at these comments about Flash and Green Lantern. Joe Tonello says, "Hey guys, I'm loving this series so far. Just dropping a line this time around to show my love for Kyle. This is probably my favorite crisis, as I've said, due to Kyle coming to the public eye and the introduction of Jack Knight, Starman. I costume both of them for my cosplay charity group. Currently, I have Kyle's initial costume and his Blackest Night New Guardians costume, crab mask and all. Kyle coming right off a personal crisis into a cosmic crisis is just the typical Parker Rayner luck. Wally, I still need to get his trades, but I'm avidly reading his journey via the DC Universe app." So he's discovering this part of the universe with us.
Oh, nice.
You know, the 1994 bit.
We're late.
Word Hill Terry says, "Once again, a delight to listen to you guys now for my take on comics I've never read. Superman and Metron somehow know about Kal Rayner, some guy who has no training, no experience, a most powerful magical artifact that he barely knows how to use, and they want him on their cosmic time-riding team? Right after we've seen Alan Scott, a hero with more experience than almost any other superhero, and has a similar powerful magical artifact, Superman and Metron don't exhibit a great deal of intelligence there. That's one of those things that makes these big events feel so top-down, editorially driven, rather than a story that feels more organic. Here's our new character. Make sure he appears in all these comics." Now, to be fair, Ward Hill Terry, this very issue of 0 hour shows that Alan Scott did receive the call.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't see it. And that they were basically using Kyle. It's like Metron was homing in on the ring.
Yeah.
So we need this ring to do this trick.
Yeah, and if one guy can take the ring away from Green Lantern, it's going to be Superman. So they wanted the ring.
We want the ring.
I mean, yeah.
Everybody wants the ring.
Everybody wants the ring.
You know, before you drop it in the volcano. Exactly. Please use the ring as basically...
But I think Alan Scott comes into this later on, if I
remember. I mean, he's there in Zero Hours.
Yeah.
Number four. So, and he's part of the JSA. So we know the JSA's fate is tied into all this. You'll see.
You will.
You will see, Terry. Tim Price says, I was reading and enjoying both of these series at the time, and what a natural pairing to do for the show. Not for where they are at this point, but what they will become. Granted, Wally and Kyle don't have the longevity of friendship that we associate with Hal and Barry or Jay and Alan, but when they did team up, it was usually written extremely well. Was it just me, or was it terribly insensitive of Alan to confront Kyle about the Lantern history right now? His girlfriend was just killed, like an hour ago. How can Kyle even pay attention? Maybe the story itself had to be rushed to let Kyle fit into Zero Hour, but the more I think about it, the less I like Alan, basically not caring about this young man's emotional state, considering he has the most powerful weapon in the universe. Seems like a time to be comforting.
Well, if we've seen something from, what's his name? His kid? Alan Scott's kid?
Obsidian.
Well, Alan's not the most comforting type dad.
I love Daryl Banks' artwork on this. He says he really demonstrated that Kyle uses the ring very differently from previous Lanterns, especially with that electric chair. Wade's run on Flash was so good, and the creation of Impulse was a master stroke. And as we'll see, he takes off in a big way starting right here. I wonder, should Bard be counted as launched from Zero Hour as well, even though his solo title doesn't start for a while? Because he's prominently in a non-Flash issue number zero. We'll talk about it then.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton Robinson says, this is an incredible issue of Green Lantern to jump into if you aren't overtly familiar with everything that has been going on. It always annoyed me that the LASCU swoops in and takes over instead of Kyle getting to finish the fight. But considering how Kyle and Major Force got to end things years down the road, maybe it was an act of mercy. Also, this crossover issue probably gave away the big twist of the Zero Hour villain clues. Funny, considering how pissy DC got over Monarch, the Monarch debacle, just 3 years earlier. For those curious, Alan Scott becomes Sentinel. This is how he untangles our questions about Sentinel.
Okay.
Alan Scott becomes Sentinel post-Zero Hour in the story Ghosts from Showcase 95, number one, written by R.A. Jones. I point this out because, A, Mr. Jones is practically a neighbor of mine. He lives in Tulsa.
Nice.
Name dropper. And B, he said that the main reason for the name change was that he pitched DC an Alan Scott miniseries that would have spun out of the Showcase appearance. Unfortunately, DC passed on the idea. I think somebody was against the JSA at this point, right? And 25 years later, Jones says he no longer remembers what his plans were.
Aww.
But thanks for that little local lore, Clinton. David S. Gutierrez says, destination, wrong town, population, you two. Everyone knows Kyle Rayner was the best GL that ever lived. I don't want to re-listen to the episode, but I don't remember us saying any different.
No. I think that
Did
was...
Did we say my favorite GL is?
No. Well,
Did we?
Well,
is your favorite GL Alan Scott? Is that what you said?
I liked him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we can like other Lanterns.
Yeah, I can like anybody who I want. I can like Kilowog.
Yeah, we can be...
We were talking about like Green Mag and then Green Man and Rock and you know, these other Green Lanterns that...
I believe the gist of it was that every Green Lantern was better than Hal Jordan. I think that was the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, Dave, you be angry. Chris Franklin says, fun show, fellas. I was too honked off on what DC did to Hal to get into Kyle. I didn't really hold it against him in crossovers and later in JLA, but the way DC handled getting rid of Hal was just awful. Johns has gone overboard with his retcons in the following years, but GL Rebirth was a brilliant hand wave of all that nonsense. I do love me some Alan Scott, however. He's my favorite GL. Well, talk to David. Along with John Stewart, still. Keep talking to David. So it's always nice to see him, whether he's young, middle-aged, old, young again, or whatever. This was a golden age for The Flash. I like Pacheco, but everyone was chasing Waringo, and I wish he'd stayed on the book. His run was far shorter than most folks remember. He barely introduced Bart before hitting the road. Speaking of which, Bart's first cover appearance made it look like he was going to be called Kid Flash. Impulse was quite a swerve, and one I had to learn to get over for a few months.
Jeez.
It's just comics.
Really?
Michael Bailey says, Kyle will always hold a special place in my heart because I was there nearly from the beginning. I collected the 1990 GL series for a few issues before it fell off my radar, so I missed out on Emerald Twilight entirely. However, I managed to find issues 51 and 52 still on the stands of my then current comic shop. The cover to 51 looked neat, so I picked up those two issues and stuck with Kyle for his entire run, with only a brief hiatus during the latter part of Winnick's run. Wally was a different story. The issue y'all covered was what hooked me on the character, not because of the issue itself, but Zero Hour was when I started collecting the larger DC universe. I had read some of the Messner-Loeb's issues back when the Flash series was announced, and I liked them. But between Zero Hour and having more money I shouldn't have been spending on comics, this was when I really fell for the character. The post-Zero Hour issues of Flash were amazing, and I'm looking forward to your coverage of the Zero issue. Let's look at Diablo Frank's comments.
Is it the whole book? Or
I am doing excerpts.
Excerpts.
He says, let's start with the Flash stuff.
Okay.
Because we know he hates the Flash.
He doesn't like the Flash.
No. He says, before Invasion and Zero Hour, I mostly gave the Flash a wide berth. I heard about Wally's befriending Barry's old cornball rogues and thought that was cute. A dude I was friendly with in school passed me the copy of Flash number 68, where Abracadabra wore the Full House gang suit. So I guess it was before. Another one of my screw-ups. I thought it was like me. Like, when did he ever wear this?
Yeah.
Around number 68. Yeah. And it was inscrutable to a Marvel zombie like me. Between Born to Run and The Return of Barry Allen, the book picked up a bit of buzz, but I never bothered to read them. Being a true 90s fanboy, I decided to give it a try with the foil-enhanced covered number 80. That was the issue that was that they tweaked Wally's version of the Flash costume to be a little sharper.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That more triangular melt, which I approved of. I preferred Alan Davis's covers to this new kid doing the interiors with these under-rendered rubbery balloon bodies and odd pencil shadings. Here he says, he goes on to say, Wieringo was too cartoony for his taste.
Oh.
Then Flash was figuring prominently in Zero Hour promotions, and people were still talking up the book in my absence, so I gave it another shot with the debut of Bart Allen in number 92. The Bartman was too fresh a memory for me to excuse the use of the name, so I skipped another issue but was back for the Zero Hour tie-in. I much preferred Carlos Pacheco's guest art to the regular guy, but I still didn't feel like I missed much. Here's the first dirty secret of Mark Waid's Flash run. See if you agree, Bess. It's as overpraised as Triangle Period Superman. At a time when all the comics were getting increasingly extreme, it was quasi-retro Silver Age revivalism. When all the hot artists were at Image and all the hot writers were doing mature readers Vertigo stuff, it was tapping into the good old days traditional storytelling with a solid, reliable creative team. These were Clydesdales turned stallions by nostalgia and a thirst for Bronze Age basics for baby boomers and older, milder Gen Xers. Now, the second secret, as inferred earlier, despite its influence on Grant Morrison to herald DC's postmodern Silver Age revival, Waid's run was doggedly Bronze Age. It's all Cobra and Magenta and self-conscious pandering to the sensibilities of grungy readers. The emphasis on legacy, with Max and Jay and the Trigger Twins and Excess, was rooted in Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway, not Arnold Drake and John Broome, though Bob Haney surely was felt at times. Yeah, there was the occasional high-concept issue like the Frozen Time one in number 91, but this was definitely more in line with Kerry Bates than distant from it. Now, number 3 is that Waid was clearly embarrassed by The Flash. When it wasn't sidelining the rogues, he was undermining or killing them. Waid came up with a bunch of Chromium Age villains that mostly didn't stick and played up the melodrama without often offering a significant payoff. Geoff Johns' run is superior to Waid's both objectively on the plotting, scripting, and characterization fronts, but also by virtue of actually embracing Flash-specific concepts. Fourth, finally, and related to the last point, Waid didn't get to write Superman, so he just wrote The Flash as Superman. This is the bit I find interesting. He's this manned-up, straight-laced, flyover-state type with an intrepid reporter girlfriend. He's impossibly overpowered and doesn't have the science fantasy underpinnings to support that like the Men of Tomorrow does. But they still find excuses for him to not defeat every villain and turn Earth into a utopia. There's a Flash girl and a Flash boy, and more of a nod to Captain Marvel and Uncle Flash. But I think that's an interesting...
It is.
...idea that...
Because he has points, but... I have no, because I have no recollection of reading. I like that run because character development, not because it was taking ideas or concepts from Bronze Age, you know, zaniness and you know, it has nothing to do with what the story was. The story is about this character coming of age and becoming a hero. So that is basically a hero quest. And oh yeah, well, you can say, well, it's just another hero quest. He's just, you know, Luke Skywalker, he's just Harry Potter, he's just... We can say that all day. Yeah, sure. Whatever. There are five stories that exist. So, I mean...
He's just Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, and it's fine. I mean, if you want to reference everything or every tied-in concept of storytelling and giving importance to people who might have been the original concepteurs of... Nobody cares about all the first 2 points. Because okay. it doesn't balance into anything.
I get your point. You're asking Frank, does it matter that the 90s we're doing this extreme thing and yeah. This seems better than it is because it was a throwback to another period?
How is that relevant?
How does that diminish my enjoyment of it?
Well, exactly.
You know, if you're a reader that enjoys a more Bronze Age take, and then in the 90s you were sort of starved for that.
Well,
if you didn't like the 90s take, then the throwback was what you liked.
It's just personal taste for Frank.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's personal taste regardless. Regardless of some sort of objective quality.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm. You say it so well. although the Supermaning part, that's very interesting though.
Yeah, no, I like
that. That made me smile.
I like
and
that.
And I think it's very true.
Because suddenly they had to mint Flash to be, because Wally wasn't as powerful as Barry.
No.
Originally. So, and for a long time. So when they decided, you know, when he needed to be JLA level, more or less,
mm-hmm.
then, okay, how can we make this one of the key characters to be as powerful as Superman and Green Lantern and
Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. So,
I'm trying to put in characters that
he likes.
That he likes. Mm-hmm. How can he be as powerful as the Martian?
Let's see what he thinks of Green Lantern. If we dare. He says...
I'm scared, actually.
Well, he says, thanks to Gil Kane's exquisite costume design, early exposure to an O'Neill Adams GLGA issue, Super Friends, and the exceptional Superpowers toy, I wanted to like the Hal Jordan Green Lantern more than I ever actually did. The cracks began when the more exposure I had to the property, the more interesting I found every other lantern than was Hal. Which was also our point.
Yeah.
At the time, he says, Emerald Twilight was a callous and cruel character assassination and a cavalier treatment of his fans. It wasn't until a few years later when Frank finally read a bunch of 70s and early 80s Hal stories that Jordan really did come across as an aggressively irrational and egocentric schmuck who, he says, I could definitely see flipping out and killing his friends. I accepted and then embraced Jordan's murderous heel turn and in fact cannot let it go no matter how much Geoff Johns tries to poorly explain it all away. I find Jordan so toxic that I think ill of the Justice League for taking him back, and haven't significantly supported their core title since JLA was canceled, in part because of his presence. In my head canon, Martian Manhunter started avoiding them as a conscientious objector. He says, my initial grievance over Jordan's treatment colored my reception of Kal Rayner as a sort of himbo, the younger, dumber model. As I began to look at Jordan's checkered history more critically, I reconsidered my perception of Rayner and came to the conclusion that I wasn't so far off. Rayner wasn't as douchey as Jordan, but he was still the hipster artist that only does profitable commercial work and still gets to date the girl you had your eye on. However much progress I've made since 1994, even then I was proto-woke enough to recognize that an iconic heroic mantle up for grabs did not need to be handed to another interchangeable single white male whose main distinction was that he was a more contemporary ideal of masculinity than Jordan's funk of macho musk, martinis, and aqua velva. At least Hal had brown hair, as pathetic a standard of minority representation as that was. Even the name Kal Rayner sounded like it came out of a screenwriter rather than a parent. Kyle Kim would have been Stan Lee alliteration for more forward-looking casting. I remember when Judd Winnick tried to get us to buy into a strand of Mexican ancestry too little, too late? Still, it's representation for...
Yeah.
Latino Americans. Gold Dragon number 71 says, when Kyle was introduced, I was really into it right away. I didn't agree with the vilification of Hal, but I was really about to drop the book until Emerald Twilight happened. The other side of it was the generational relatable hero aspect. So he's going to defend Kyle. Hal was originally cut in the role of Chuck Yeager in the early 60s. That's the kind of guy kids wanted to grow up to be. In the early 90s, Emerald Dawn, they tried to update him to a Top Gun type hero.
Yeah.
When Kyle was introduced, he was a comic book artist, a slacker in his 20s, and as fellow slacker who had aspirations towards a career in comics, I found him much more relatable than a guy who was really my dad's Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Barry Reese asks if the show is available on Spotify, and I have to say we're not there yet, though on Fire and Water, Rob Kelly did make the move with Pod Dylan, so we'll ask him how it's going, if it's worth it, if how many people access these shows through that platform, and we'll try to hook you up, Barry. Before we go, we have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network now has a Patreon page. So if you like our content, please think about making a one-time or a monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on the zero list at patreon.com/FW podcasts. A reminder also that you can leave us comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow the Fire and Water Facebook page or on Twitter. The account is FW podcasts.
Now let's read some more comics.
And, yeah. In the coming months, we'll get through this, what used to be a week of comics back in 1994.
Next time on Zero Hour Strikes, Dark Stars and Superman number 93.